Reading from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first chapter entitled The Advent of Krishna, text number 3. Avati yadur vamsi bhagavan bhuta bhavana kritavan yanirishvatma tanino radavistarat. The super soul, the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, appeared in the dynasty of Yadu. Please tell me elaborately about his glorious activities and character from the beginning to the end of his life. Purport. In this verse, the words Kritaranyani indicate that all the different activities Krishna performed while present on earth are beneficial to human society. If religionists, philosophers, and people in general simply hear the activities of Krishna, they will be liberated. We have described several times that there are two kinds of Krishna Katha, represented by Bhagavad Gita, spoken personally by Krishna about himself, and Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Sukadeva Goswami about the glories of Krishna. Anyone who becomes even slightly interested in Krishna Katha is liberated. Kirtanat Eva Krishna Sya Mukta Sanga Param Bhajet Srimad Bhagavatam 12.351. Simply by chanting or repeating Krishna Katha, one is liberated from the contamination of Kali. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised Yarade Kitare Kaha Kripush Krishna Pradesh. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhuri 728. This is the mission of Krishna consciousness, to hear about Krishna and thus be liberated from material bondage. In the Bhagavad Gita, we find the introduction towards approaching Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita explains about the eternal nature of the living being, of the soul, and how we are distinct from the body. The Bhagavad Gita explains that we are the eternal servant of Krishna. And the Bhagavad Gita is describing the three modes of material nature and how the living being is affected by these three modes of material nature and how one can become transcendental to the three modes of material nature by devotional service. In this way, the Bhagavad Gita connects to the conditioned soul, to Krishna, and to devotional service. It comes in the middle of the material world, of material existence, where we are embodied in a material body, and where we have come into the bodily concept of life. Then the Bhagavad Gita gives us udaradi, broader intelligence, and it lifts us above the conditioned state and makes us aware of our eternal nature. And finally, not only that nature is eternal spirit soul, but also eternal servant of Krishna. And then we can begin Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is gradually showing us all the different manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And gradually coming to the topmost. In the ninth canto, we come to Lord Ramachandra. And now, in the tenth canto, we are coming to the pastimes of Krishna. So Krishna is eternally performing his pastimes. Krishna is eternally residing in his abode. And sometimes Krishna comes to the material world to manifest his pastimes on planet Earth. And then Krishna reveals in these pastimes the nature of the spiritual world. There's a distinct difference between the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra and the pastimes of Lord Krishna, because Lord Ramachandra particularly comes to establish the principles of Dharma throughout, prescribed duty. And in that way, Lord Ramachandra gives the perfect example for all human beings. But Krishna, he's also doing that to an extent. But in Vrindavan, Krishna performs pastimes that are of a different nature. Outside of Vrindavan, Krishna acts like the other avatars, Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinasya Sadushkritam Dharmasamstarpanatya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. Then Krishna comes to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the demons. But in Vrindavan, Krishna also discloses something of his eternal pastimes in the spiritual world. In that way, Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to the Bhagavad Gita. In that sense, a more advanced revelation now that we're coming to the pastimes of Krishna. So many times we are praying to Krishna, "Oh Krishna, please, please solve my problems. Oh Krishna, please help me. My life is so difficult. Oh Krishna, my wife. Oh Krishna, my husband. Oh Krishna, my children." Or, "Oh Krishna, I have all these desires and they're not fulfilled. Oh Krishna, oh Krishna, oh Krishna." In this way, so many times, we approach Krishna to benedict us for our life in this world, in the embodied state where we are, in this material world. And we ask Krishna to help us somehow or other, to serve him and to be a devotee in the midst of this life. But we should remember that now, on the eve, that means the night before Janmashtami, on this night we are approaching the day of Krishna's appearance, when Krishna is himself performing transcendental pastimes in this world, when in a sense Krishna is not appearing in this world but bringing the spiritual world into the material world, and when Krishna is revealing to us the nature of his own world. So rather than praying to Krishna for our world and benediction so that we can live easier and that we can somehow or other manage to carry on in this world, Janmashtami is for focusing on Krishna, on his world, on his pastimes, on what is pleasing to him, not on what is pleasing to us. So, in this spirit, Janmashtami is celebrated. We're celebrating now Krishna's pleasure. The other day I was mentioning on my first experience of Janmashtami, I had not yet moved into the temple, and I was totally confused. Because here these devotees, they're fasting. They're fasting the whole day, and at the same time they're cooking. And they're like, "What is this?" They're fasting and they're just cooking and cooking and cooking. And I couldn't get it. Now, is this some sort of, are they testing their renunciation to see how strong they are in their fast? Yeah? Why in the world would they, are they torturing themselves? Is it some, like in the Middle Ages, monks used to beat themselves with a cork? But maybe the Hare Krishna's of a modern version. You know, you fast and at the same time you cook the whole day in the kitchen. You're starving and there's all these wonderful preparations all around you. Looking and when the mind is getting agitated, at least my mind was getting very agitated. I found it extreme, like, who would do such a thing? I couldn't understand. Because I missed the point. I missed the point that the day was for the pleasure of Krishna, and that the day was about approaching Krishna in his world, where endless devotees are making endless arrangements for his pleasure, and they don't care about anything else. They don't make arrangements for their own pleasure, because their pleasure is Krishna's pleasure. What pleasure is greater than giving pleasure to Krishna? That is the basic principle of Janmashtami. The idea of the Adivas ceremony, or is Adi means the origin and Vas means the embodiment. So it is the embodiment or the essence of the beginning of Janmashtami. And the idea is that in an Adivas ceremony there is a meditation, something, a sankalpa, it is said, that one fixes the mind in on a particular mood and a particular goal that one wants to achieve in Janmashtami. So Janmashtami, I have a metaphor, which is that in the beginning we are in the material world, and suddenly we come in touch with Krishna consciousness, and then we kind of reach out a leg to take a step towards the spiritual world, and in this way we're approaching the spiritual world, but in the beginning all the weight is still on the material leg, and as long as the weight is on the material leg, We are struggling to control the senses. We are very conscious of our life in this world, of our physical situation, where we are, how old we are, what we look like, what we have, what we possess. All these things, I and mine, are that material footing, that material leg. Then, with time, we shift the weight. We begin to offer more and more weight in Krishna's service. And as we shift the weight onto the leg, on the spiritual side, less and less weight is on the material side. And less we care about all these external things. Where we are, and this, that, hot, cold, lost profit, this or that, so many things. They all come and go. But Krishna, Krishna is what we have. Even life and death. Life and death. What is death anyway? Prabhupada said, we're not alive. The body is not alive in the first place. So what is dying? The soul is never dying, and the body is also not dying, because it was never alive. It's the soul that is alive, and that takes this dead body along. So what is dying? Nothing is dying. The soul is not dying, the body is not dying. The body was dead already. It was never alive. So in this way, all these things become less significant. And as we shift the weight towards the spiritual side, on the spiritual leg, we start to no longer think about what we want from Krishna, but we start to think about what we can give Krishna, what we can offer Krishna for his pleasure. And thus, we put our own things aside. Janmashtami is a day to act on that platform, on that transcendental platform. Whether we are there or not, that is another matter. But it is a day where we put everything towards Krishna. Our whole offering is for the pleasure of Krishna. Of course, There's also a day after Jamashtami. So we're not going to kill ourselves in the cause of austerity. We look also a bit after our own material health and so on. But at the same time, Jamashtami is a day to just simply serve Krishna. Devotional service is ninefold: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. We can hear about Krishna, and it begins there. So we hear the whole day about Krishna. Just an old tradition used to be that we would read Krishna book the whole day. Yeah? Just that would go on somewhere. Maybe not just in the temple, but somewhere there would be a place where the whole day the reading of the Krishna book was going on from morning till night. And you could just walk in anytime and hear the Krishna book. Just about Krishna. Simple. And the whole day, just nothing else. The pastimes of Krishna. Then, of course, there's preaching. In the evening, so many guests will come and we will also entertain them with dramatic performances and so on to remind them of Krishna. All that is Shravanam, all that is hearing, whether there is acting as part of it, but the essence of Shravanam is to get absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna, in the qualities of Krishna, in the nature of Krishna, and we just hear like this about Krishna. Then, Kirtana, we glorify Krishna. Krishna can be glorified, of course, by the Mahamantra, of course, by speaking about him, or he can be glorified by beautiful decorations. He can be glorified by Harinam Sankirtan in the city. He can be glorified in somehow or other spread the name, fame and glory of Krishna into this world. Kirtana. Sravanam Kirtana. Then remember Krishna. Not only external, but also internal. Smaranam. Also internally, that we are purifying our minds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comments, he says that for most people, the mind and the heart are the same. So whatever is in the mind is wherever the heart is. If the heart is looking for material security, then the mind will think of money. If we in the heart understand that Krishna is our security, then we will not look for shelter anywhere else. Then we realize Krishna is our only shelter. So real smaranam means that. It means shraddha. Smaranam, or remembering Krishna, is related to Shraddha, to deep faith. And it is, a Vaishnava is classified as either a neophyte, an intermediate, or a topmost Vaishnava according to his faith. Kanista Mahajam Uttam Shraddha Anusari. According to his level of faith, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Shraddha Sapta Viswas Kaya Sudrida Nischaya Krishna Bhakti Kaya Sarva Kama Krita Hai. That we may speak this word Shraddha. It means firm faith that from devotional service to Krishna, all benefits will be attained. Everything good there is will be attained. That's really, that faith must be there. And that is our smaranam. That is our remembrance of Krishna. It's not that we're remembering Krishna just as an exercise. We may hear about Krishna, we may remember Krishna. And it is always good to remember Krishna, because one gets purified. But that is remembering Krishna in practice, as a sadhana. But when we are remembering Krishna as sadhya, as the goal, then we are remembering that He is our only shelter. So let our smaranam be like that. Let us do both things. Let us remember Krishna as a sadhana in practice, just the whole day remembering Krishna. Janmashtami is also a time when we increase our sadhana, when we increase our hearing and chanting. So it's also a day when we chant more rounds. Some devotees, I know one devotee, every Janmashtami, he chants 120 rounds and he distributes 120 Bhagavad Gitas. That's how many years we use Janmashtami now. Some or other. It's not easy to do both, but it's doing both. So, in this way, we see that because we are on the platform of sadhana, the platform of cultivation, because we are not on the platform of bhava, the platform of absorption, the platform where we're so absorbed in remembrance of Krishna that just ecstasy automatically manifests. No? We're on the platform of cultivation of remembrance of Krishna. Therefore, on a day like Janmashtami, devotees also take vows like that. That's now his vow, right? It's like, and because somehow or other he's done it many years, Krishna allows him to do it again and again. Yeah? Somehow or other, every year he manages to do it. And for the rest of the year, he doesn't look like somebody so extraordinary. Yeah. You wouldn't notice that this devotee is so different. Just a devotee like so many others. But every Janmashtami, the lion comes out, you know, it's like hidden the whole year, and then from Janmashtami, there it is. Yeah? It reveals some very deep determination, which is not of this world. The determination to really make a special offering to Krishna. So we cannot think. We cannot think before the night ends what we can do. One Janmashtami I cooked, and together with another devotee, and we both do 75 preparations, and not quick ones, serious ones. So, you know, these preps, right? That we're gonna do so many preps for Krishna, and one you throw a little green dye in it, and another some blue dye, and it's the same prep but a different color. No, we're talking now of real preparations, all different. So we were cooking and cooking and cooking. And we both did 75, and it was ecstatic. Then we served all the devotees later, the Mahaprasadam. And then at the end, there were two plates, each with 150 preparations. Oh, gosh. I didn't have the shakti for that power to eat all those preparations. Oh, I still remember that. But in this way, we can decide how to serve, what we will do. Make a plan to make something out of our Janmashtami. Because we cannot just go into smaranam in that way of the advanced Vaishnavas, who deeply, deeply remember that Krishna is their only shelter, their only source of happiness, and that his pleasure is their only pleasure. But let us somehow or other spend our day in dedication to Krishna with firm faith. If we do that, one day, the scriptures are saying there is Nitya Kriya and Naimitika Kriya. Nitya Kriya means it is part of Bhajana Kriya. You may know, Bhajana Kriya is the regulated activity in devotional service, which we are performing. Then Nitya Kriya is the everyday activity, and Naimitika Kriya is the special activity, the extraordinary activity which sometimes we engage in. In Naimitika Kriya, we are going to act on a platform which is more advanced than where we usually are. And the result of Naimitika Kriya is performed on special days, like Janmashtami or other appearance days of the Lord, or Ekadasi, or these kind of days. And on those days, we do something more. And this Naimitika Kriya has a dual function. One is, it revives our Nitya Kriya, our everyday practice, which had become dry. It brings new life into the dryness of our everyday practice. And we go to a platform higher than where we've been before. And that becomes like a handle. You know, just like sometimes you need a handle to pull yourself up. Old men use all kinds of handles to get out of the bathtub or whatever. You know? A handle to pull ourselves up. So when we act on a higher platform for one day, then that becomes a handle from, okay, I did it on Janmashtami, so I can do it again, and again, and again. And gradually, it becomes something that we do more often. And we can, in this way, we can grow. We can grow in our devotional service and become more and more advanced. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Madhava Chiti Bhakti Janani. So these titis, these astronomical constellations that are the same now as at the time of Krishna, day of Krishna's appearance, these kind of titis, astronomical constellations, are very auspicious. From them, bhakti is born. How is that? Because we can make a special endeavor, and because there is special mercy. These two things. Krishna, because he appears at a certain constellation, and now Janmashtami is again at that time, then so many auspicious influences are present. Then the Vaishnavas, by coming all together and worshipping Krishna in that way, create more auspiciousness by hearing and chanting and serving Krishna. So in this way, we carry on and we serve Krishna. So the ninefold process continues. Archanam, we worship the deity in a very gorgeous day. In India, on Janmashtami, the temples don't close. The deities stay open. Krishna, in the day, Krishna doesn't take rest. Not on Janmashtami. The temples are open all throughout, and offerings are being made the whole day, all throughout, many more than usual. In this way, Archanam, a day to make many special offerings to the deities. Vandanam, to offer prayers, and so on. And again, maybe some more internal aspects, Sakyam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Serving Krishna is in any way possible, appreciating Krishna as our best friend, and we also being the best friend towards Krishna, and trying to really surrender. So that is Janmashtami. Even if the whole year we are not so surrendered, Janmashtami is different. It is for surrender. Health may still be a consideration. That one must, even on Janmashtami, one must look after his health. That's another matter. Because that is for our long-term service to Krishna. But otherwise, there's nothing to hold us back. Nothing. We should really... It is a day to take it to the limits. So these are some of the reflections on the advent of Krishna as... We know how the earth was overburdened by the military phalanxes of so many demoniac kings. How Bhumi, in the form of a cow, went before Lord Brahma and just expressed her grief. And Lord Brahma felt greatly aggrieved. And Lord Brahma, he agreed to go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And all the demigods, along with Bhumi, followed Lord Brahma, and they went to the shore of the ocean of milk, where Kshiradaksaya Vishnu was resting on a bed of Sheshanag in the milk ocean. And they prayed. They prayed. And then the Lord communicated to Lord Brahma from within the heart, and instructed Lord Brahma that all the demigods should appear in the family of the Yadus, and that very soon he himself would also appear in the family of the Yadus. And thus gradually we begin. And we know that Maharaj Ugrasena was the king. And we know that his wife was named Padmavati, and we know that she came from a Himalayan kingdom. And it is said once, Padmavati was sent to her father's house for some time. And she was there in the mountains, along with some servants, some maid servants, and they were enjoying on the mountain meadows. And then just then, one Rakshasa was passing by, and it is said that this Rakshasa, when he saw this lady, he was immediately attracted. And the Rakshasa could see, as he came a bit closer, with his plane, he was flying in the sky, he could see that she had signs of being married. The red kumkum and the dot and so on. But that didn't stop him. Rather, what he did, he inquired who her husband was, and he found out that she was Padmavati, the queen of Maharaj Ugrasena. Next moment, Ugrasena appeared there. And Ugrasena walked down the meadows. The maid servants could see what was coming, and they retreated. And in that romantic setting, she was amazed. She said, "You came." He said, "I missed you so much." She melted right there and then. And from one thing came another. But in the embrace, she realized that this was not her husband, because the touch was different. It was more forceful. And then she said, too late anyway, and she said, "Who are you?" "You are not my husband," he said. "I am Drumila." And she was obviously very upset. But anyway, later she conceived of a son who became Kamsa. And Kamsa was quite a personality, because Kamsa was quite strong, extremely powerful. I mean, we are reading things about Kamsa in the Garga Samhita, especially. There are many details about Kamsa which are kind of impressive. Also, the Gopal Champu describes about Kamsa. It is said there was one Gopa king who was harassed. This Gopa king didn't want to pay taxes to the Kurus. He was supposed to pay tax. He didn't pay. So anyway, there was a major fight between him and the Kurus, and this Gopa king then was defeated, but he escaped, saved his life, and took shelter of Kamsa. And Kamsa agreed to protect him. And Kamsa went out to battle and fought with the Kurus. And at the time, Kamsa was knocking over many of the heroes. And Kamsa was lifting elephants and throwing these elephants into the army, and in this way smashing so many, many soldiers. So Kamsa was extremely powerful, very, very powerful. When we see all the demons that were sent by Kamsa to Krishna, to kill Krishna, all these demons, they fought with Krishna and were defeated by Krishna. But first, they were defeated by Kamsa. Kamsa personally fought with Dainikasura. And Kamsa took Dainikasura and threw him away at a distance. That huge elephant, Kuvalyadipa, it was an elephant, a monster of an elephant, a black elephant. And he was enormous, and he was like having an intoxicated mood. And that elephant came into Mathura. It was an elephant that belonged to Jarasandha. And that elephant came into the city of Mathura and started to break the whole city of Mathura. Kamsa personally came. "Who is breaking our city?" At that time, his father Ugrasena was still on the throne. And Kamsa took that elephant and threw it away as far as 80 yojanas, right? So Kamsa was not just a lightweight, so to speak. I mean, Kamsa definitely was very, very powerful, very strong. Then Kamsa went up to the heavenly planets and fought with Indra and chased Indra away and took the throne of Indra and brought it to Mathura. Of course, he was thinking to bring that throne for himself. He did not realize that he brought that throne for Krishna, who later on gained the throne of Mathura. Anyway, first Kamsa brought the throne and offered it to Ugrasena, but then he was thinking, what can Ugrasena do for us? He's an old man. So he, one day, he just, with some soldiers, arrested Ugrasena and locked him up in his private quarters, and Kamsa sat down on the throne himself. And thus Kamsa became king, although Ugrasena, the actual legal king, was still alive. And yes, held in captivity. In this way, in the eve of Janmashtami, I thought I should begin with Kamsa. And, you know, speak a little bit about Kamsa, just to sort of to get an idea and how powerful Kamsa really was. When Kamsa dealt with Agasura, it wasn't easy to fight that serpent. But what Kamsa did, by mystic power, he made his body a little bigger and he made a ring around the neck of Agasura by grabbing his ankles with his hands and pulling tight. And in this way he strangled Agasura, who choked to the point where he said, I surrender. And in this way, Kamsa subjugated also Agasura and many other demons. So all the demons that actually went for Kamsa on his command to kill Krishna were all at one point conquered by Kamsa. In this way, Kamsa began to usurp more and more kingdoms. Kamsa began to invade the territory of neighboring kingdoms, and this way became a real terror. Then, when this elephant came and he threw it back to Jarasandha, 80 yojanas, Jarasandha was so impressed. He said, Who did this? And he said, it was Kamsa from Mathura. Then, Jarasandha said, he went there and he offered Kamsa his daughter. He said, such a powerful man has to be my brother-in-law. Has to be my son-in-law. And in this way, the connection between the two most powerful demons of the time came about. And as a wedding gift, amongst many other gifts, Jarasandha gave that elephant to Kamsa. And that is not Kamsa, but the elephant. So in this way, we can appreciate that Kamsa was indeed a terror. And it is not surprising that everyone in the entire district of Mathura, including Vrindavan, lived in fear of Kamsa. But then we see the marriage of Devaki. It is said that Devaki is the sister of Kamsa, but in modern terms, he would say she was a cousin. And even now in India, they say cousin sister, cousin brother. They call that cousin brother, my cousin brother. Yes, my brother, cousin brother. She was Devaki, the daughter of Devaka. But interrelated, I forgot now, I need to look that up somewhere, that whole family genealogical table. Somewhere. Anyway, in this way, at the time of the marriage of his sister, it was the custom that when the sister would go to the house of her in-laws, that the brother would accompany her on the way and make sure she was settled nicely in the new place. Everything was okay, and then he would go home and leave her there. So that it was a smooth transition. So Kamsa fulfilled all these things, and it is of course then that prophecy came, that the eighth pregnancy of the sister would kill him, the eighth son. So, and that's of course where it begins, Kamsa's fear. I like Kamsa's fear very much as a theme. In the There's a nice passage in the Nectar of Devotion, which I think is very nice. It is described that Kamsa was sitting on his throne and saying, "Ha! What can Krishna do to me? I have so many powerful allies." You know, Kesi, I mean the embodiment of power. Who can stand up against Kesi? Just then, a messenger came into the court and said, "Your Majesty, Your Majesty, Your Majesty, a disaster, a disaster." Kamsa said, "No, no, no. What is it? Tell me." "No, I don't want to hear. Tell me. No, I don't want to hear. Tell me." Then he says, "Kamsa, Your Majesty, Kesi, no, no. Your Majesty, he killed Kesi." Said, "No, no, no, not Kesi. He is too powerful. He says too powerful. Maybe I should just surrender to him." "Nah, how could I do that? Me, Kamsa, what would people say? No. Then instead, let me go to Vrindavan and inflict pain on the residents of Vrindavan. But how can I do that when I'm too afraid to leave my palace?" As you can see, I have sometimes played the part of Kamsa. I do a good Kamsa, although I'm a bit small for Kamsa, but still. I get the mood. It comes natural. What can I say? Anyway, so in this way we see how Kamsa, even in Kamsa's demoniac mentality, there was a moment where he almost surrendered to Krishna. He considered it a crack in his demoniac mentality. And that is something amazing. That is something where we say, well, you know, even demons can become devotees. So with that, I wanted to give us some hope, just before Dhammasthani. Even demons can become devotees, so do not worry. It is possible. I've just provided the proof. So there's no need to be in anxiety. In that way, Dhammasthani can really help us in this regard. So that is my prayer now on this evening before Dhammasthani, that we somehow or other prepare for the pastimes of Krishna. And we know Kamsa will be killed, and that's not surprising, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Kamsa has no chance. So it's not so much that Kamsa will be killed, but we will see how. I'll give you one little preview from the Gopal Champu, just sort of. In the Gopal Champu, Kamsa is arranging this wrestling match, and it is a huge match. And these wrestlers, they are mountain among men, much bigger and monsters in comparison to Krishna and Balaram. But they get defeated by Krishna and Balaram. And Kamsa is just he's beyond himself, because they were not just wrestlers, they were very his close associates. They were like close allies. They were very dear to him. They were like, you know, part of his core team. So he was very much shocked that these wrestlers had been defeated. And then what happened is, in Gopal Champu, then Krishna and Balaram had a wrestling match with the cowherd boys. And then Krishna was defeated. And that was like insult, you know, insult to injury. That was just too much. That's when Kamsa snapped. He just lost it. He just like, And he just yelled out, "Arrest Nanda Maharaj!" And, you know, and take all his possessions, all his cows, confiscate them. Well, then what could Krishna do? Then, as Nanda Maharaj was being attacked, then he had to act. And he jumped on the dais, and he just, you know, there was the royal guard, but Krishna jumped so high, he jumped right over. And then what he did in the Gopal Champu, he knocked the crown of Kamsa's head, and Kamsa lost his balance and fell off the dais, and he was dead. So you could sort of say, it wasn't sure if Krishna killed him or if it was an accident. Some have accused Krishna of killing Kamsa, but you know, I mean, really, they have to prove it first, you know. Really. I mean, the evidence is not conclusive. Yeah? It's not conclusive, according to Jiva Goswami. We might consider letting Krishna off, just that you know. Of course, you know.
There was no punch then in the Gopal Champu.
In the Gopal Champu, there was just a flick, you know. Just so instead of no punch, but just a slap, and the crown fell off. Then, of course, he crashed on the ground. But afterwards, you know, just to show that he was, you know, that at one point to show that he was really dead, that part is there. But he did. But then he was already dead, so then you could beat him. That was not guilty. Yeah. So it is very interesting how we have different perspectives. The Hari Vamsa is zooming in on this pastime and is saying that when Krishna hit, Krishna got Chandura, hit him on the head, and the eyes of Chandura popped out of the sockets and they were dangling. This was just a Hari Vamsa, colorful detail. So like this, just a little preview of Kamsa being killed. In the spiritual world, of course, you don't see Kamsa, but everybody knows that Kamsa is still there. So in the material world, Kamsa is killed, but in the spiritual world, Kamsa is always there. So watch out, Kamsa is immature, and anything can happen anymore. Kamsa can come. Kamsa can send soldiers. Kamsa is always there in the background, you know, always a threat in the spiritual world. So in this way, these pastimes of killing Kamsa are going on eternally. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, it makes Kamsa a prototype. When he writes about Kamsa, he speaks about the Kamsas of this world. The mundane demoniac men who are trying to, you know, use their power to exploit others. He speaks about these Kamsas. And so with that, we can also for a moment look at the little Kamsa in ourselves. Just tonight, just before Janmashtami begins, we can have a moment and think about that. The little Kamsa in us that may still not be dead. Will we kill him tomorrow?
Or the Putana?
For the ladies, right? The little Putana that is still there. Right? Yes. Will she die tomorrow? We shall see. So the Putanas, the Kamsas of this world, right? They are dwarf Kamsas, dwarf Putanas, because in this age of Kali, we are little demons in power, but as demoniac in mentality, equally so. It says that Agasura, he was a mystic yogi. And Agasura, as a mystic yogi, he took that form of the snake. And why did he like the form of the snake? Because snakes have cold blood. And he was so cold-blooded that he saw all human beings or all living beings as utensils. And therefore, he took that form of the snake. So in this way, each of the demons took the form that fit by their mentality. Yeah, I'm going to end now and leave you. You can make one sentence. I'm going to leave you to meditate on all these things. Summarize it once again. The Adivas, what is our Sankalpa? What is our objective? What are we going to do this Jamashtami? Not just let it happen, but what are we going to do with this Jamashtami to take full advantage of it? The devotional service. Choose devotional service. Hearing, chanting, remembering, and all the other aspects of devotional service. And if you get absorbed in this way, then we can take full advantage of this Jamashtami. And then this Jamashtami will help us to come to a higher platform in devotional service, and it will bring new life to our everyday practice in devotional service. Thank you very much.
You mentioned how while we're observing Jamashtami, we're mindful also of the next day.
Yeah.
You know, in my 46 years in the Hare Krishna movement, I don't think I've ever successfully navigated those 2 days. I always feel like I've either shortchanged Janashtami or shortchanged Vyasa Puja. I've tried so many different ways to observe them.
Yeah.
And have you ever found a way to successfully observe both days? I mean, fully observe both days. I just physically, mentally can never quite pull it off.
Somehow or other. Srila Prabhupada appeared on this Nanda Utsav, right? On the day after Krishna's appearance, when the celebration was there. And what to say, that's like, it's super intense on us conditioned souls. Very intense. And when I was young and super healthy, sleep 2 hours or not at all, stay up the whole night and just go on till after the feast, right? And then crash. Yeah. The feast usually was the end.
Yeah.
That's this. You make it as far as the feasts and then it's over. And then it's like unconscious, comatic condition. And then in between,
I always miss Guru Puja the next morning.
Yeah. Well, then you get all these things, you know. You start to miss Mangalarti, you start to miss Guru Puja, and you just... it helps to eat light, of course. It helps not to, after breaking the fast, just lose all sense control. And it helps to eat very light.
But still, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, or something, by the time we finish talking to the devotees.
Sure. And then do. So, what do I think about all that now? I think that now I don't try to do everything anymore. I don't even think that's... But what I do, I try to do with quality. Yeah? I try to just put some quality into it. I don't try to do the maximum quantity anymore on Jamashtami.
You don't try to be Superman.
I used to. But I've kind of... even if there's still some desire in me to try and be Superman, I know I'm not. I really know I'm not by now. So, yeah, I'm not going to try and be Superman. Definitely not. I'm just going to try and survive, Jonas. That's my psychology. That's my personal. And get some quality. I'm not going to chant the most rounds I've ever chanted on Jamastami. I'm not going to cook so many preparations. I'm not going to do the longest and the wildest kirtan I've ever done in my life. I'm not going to try and, you know, drive all the devotees through the ceiling. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to try and be sane. I'm going to try and be mature about Jamastami this time. I think that's all right. I mean, I think just a moment, you know, we saw these, we had appearance days of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and I remember that one year Puri Maharaj came, Prabhupada's godbrother, who was 93 at the time, which is very old, and they carried, sort of, several men were carrying him, sort of supporting him as he was walking, and they kind of dropped him on the Vyasasana. It wasn't a soft landing, you know. In India, these things go like that sometimes. Anyway, and then it was time to speak, and I remember that he had come many times, and he had told many stories in the past about Prabhupada. This time, spoke very short. He said, they say Swamiji, right? So he said, Swamiji, he made you all into Vaishnavas. He said, and Vaishnavas, they can give blessings. So you please all bless me. And that was big, you know. Especially in Prabhupada's time, he had some reservations about these new Western devotees. And by saying that, he also showed that he had, that he fully accepted us, and that he fully accepted, yes, by Prabhupada's mercy, we all became devotees. And that was so short, you know, he was 93, that all he could do was three sentences, but very concentrated, you know, and I was like an old Zen master, you know, young guys, the kicks and the fly, and the old guy, the chi, you know. That's the chi. I think it's something like that. You know. Very concentrated, concentrated smiling, concentrated meditation. In three sentences, he said it all, actually.
Thank you.
Any other question? Otherwise, I'm getting off the hot seat. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Krishna Janmashtami, Namo Mahotsav ki jai.